Can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait.
It was a good game. Both teams play hard.
With no regard for human life.
To all the non-believers, all we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
I got man hits like I was Rod Carew.
Yeah. Can't wait.
What happened offensively in that period?
Turnovers.
What about on the defensive end? They had their most productive quarter. What'd you see there?
Turnovers. Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six.
Not the game that I go out there and die for.
This is grown man B.I.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Relax and take notes.
Hello and welcome to Can't Wait on KXCI, where we like sports and we don't care who knows. Joining us today, as always, as in the future, will be Matt Milner.
Hi, everybody.
We have Rusty Boulay-Stevenson.
Hello.
And my name is Nick Provenis, and this is our first show, but in traditional sports fashion, we ran out a couple of exhibition shows to just for us to kind of figure out what we're doing. And this is our regular season debut, and we decided to debut with something that is near and dear to our hearts, the NBA playoffs. I think the NBA playoffs is the greatest thing in sports. So I'm going to start by asking you guys kind of a book report prompt. What does the NBA playoffs mean to you, Matt Milner?
Well, I mean, I think that the NBA playoffs has a really bad rap for being so long. You know, the stereotype about the NBA is that half the season is the playoffs. But that's what makes it so great, is that the regular season at times, I think, can feel a little bit like you're just waiting for the playoffs to begin. But once the playoffs begin and every game means something and the guys are dialed in, the best players are playing for 38 to 42 minutes a game, I think that it's the finest basketball product that you see at any level in the world, and we get to enjoy 3 months of it. It's wonderful.
How about you, Rusty? What does it mean to you?
Well, I agree with Matt. I think it's some fine sports, the best sports that you're going to see. And as Matt's kind of alluded to at times, it's so poetic sometimes, the NBA playoffs. I love the fact that so often teams have to go through teams that have beaten them before, mm-hmm. and that seems to really happen year after year after year. And I love that continuity exists. And you know what else it means to me is there's a sense of nostalgia for me too, because I remember a lot of times my brother and I would watch the first quarter and the last quarter, and the second and third quarter we would be playing the NBA live game of the two games.
That's really good.
Probably two out of three.
Now, when I watch the NBA playoffs, I watch something that I feel like to me is the most effective way of crowning a champion. Every other sport, it feels like to me, there is such an inherent sense of randomness when it comes to who ends up as the champion at the end of the season. College basketball is obviously the most random. It's a single elimination tournament, which is a blast. But I would say they might crown the team that I feel like is the best maybe 60% of the time. Football, you know, you have that single elimination playoff game. How many times does a team that wins the Super Bowl feel like, oh, that was the best team this year? Not that often, really. Baseball is this 162-game slog that is defined by, what, 3 weeks? I mean, you get a hot starting pitcher, and all of a sudden you find yourself as a 500 team that is now the World Series champion. Hockey, you get a hot goalie, and you can just run roughshod through the playoffs, even though maybe you weren't that great, really. I just feel like basketball, in order to win 4 best-of-7 series against the elite of the elite, you just don't have fluky champions. And I love that. I love the gauntlet that these teams have to go through to get to the top. I feel like it historically represents what mattered in basketball, and I feel like it's the most accurate representation of true greatness.
That's why you get that continuity of the teams having to go through the teams they've lost to in the past. Those Bulls teams had to beat Detroit.
Right.
You know, and so that gauntlet is brilliant that way. It really does weed out the best. I mean, you get – that's not exactly the best way to put it, but it is. You get the best of the best by the end. There's just no two ways about it.
Well, in the nature of basketball as well is that because you've only got 5 guys out there on the court for any for each team, and you've got their faces exposed and their personalities exposed in the pressure cooker that is a 7-game series, I feel like you learn a lot more about the players, about the teams, about the personalities, and there's more room for just human drama to come through, which is, at the end of the day, the most compelling part about sports.
And the NBA playoffs is such a sensation that we already have tons of listener-submitted questions when we haven't even had a show yet. So people have found us at Can't Wait at... We don't even have an email address.
It's hard to believe that we have all these listener questions but we without have been, an email address.
We right? have been bombarded with listener questions. So Jean-Claude from Yuma wants to know, which soon-to-be free agent has the most on the line this postseason? I'll take it from you first, Rusty.
You know, I've thought about this a little bit. I read Jean-Claude's question ahead of time. And I think it really boils down to one player. I think the point guard from Dallas.
Rondo.
Thank you, Rajon Rondo. I think he's by far the person with the most to prove. Though they're going to everybody's going to get overpaid. In free agency, that's what happens. And he's going to be overpaid for what he is. He's clearly past his prime. He's clearly ready to not be leading a team, but somebody's going to pay him to be a leader. And I think almost no matter what happens in the playoffs, but if Dallas fizzles, if he really fizzles here, there will be marquee teams that may not come calling right away if he doesn't have a decent postseason here.
But then in game one, he had that second quarter, that little flourish of playoff Rondo where he shows you, I can dominate a game in every conceivable way. He was hitting corner threes, pull-up jumpers. It was just this little flash to be like, I'm going to make my money. And I might only give it to you in 8-minute bursts, but just remember, I used to be that guy that went toe-to-toe with LeBron and tossed up triple-doubles, so I think he's also the kind of guy that is saving this knowing that money, his last shot at real money is on the line.
Yeah, and I love Rajon Rondo. He's one of my favorite players in the NBA because there's really nobody else quite like him. He's a very, very strange and unique personality. He has a game that's funky and unique. But I agree that I think he has a lot on the line because there's some things about Rondo that you lose track of. I mean, obviously, we think about those great playoff battles with LeBron when he was going toe-to-toe with him and absolutely dominating on both ends of the floor. But Rondo has not played more than 68 games since the 2009-2010 season.
Totally true.
Over the last 5 years, he's averaged 51 games per season. And he obviously struggled in making the adjustment to coming over to Dallas this year, trying to fit into Rick Carlisle's system. And Rondo, as brilliant as he is probably the single most stubborn player in the NBA. And we learned, you know, with the Rick Carlisle experience this year that Rondo is not one of those star-level players that you can slot in on any roster and he'll make that team better. He arguably has made Dallas worse. They were just an offensive juggernaut when he arrived.
Just lighting up the league.
Yeah, and now they are pretty pedestrian.
Because it's tough to deal with a point guard that doesn't want to shoot free throws.
Doesn't want to shoot free throws and is obviously a liability from three-point range as well. So, you know, I think agree that Rondo definitely has a lot to prove here. If he can capture some of that magic, it'd be great. But I also think his backcourt mate, Monte Ellis, is in a similar situation. Monte is also going to be a free agent. He's another guy who's been polarizing over the course of his career.
That's a political way to put it.
Yeah. Well, not an advanced stats darling. You know, he's always been sort of inefficient. He's undersized, struggles to defend his position. But his counting stats have always been very impressive. I mean, he's averaged over 19 points and close to 5 assists over a 10-year career, which is, you know, those are remarkable numbers no matter how you slice it.
He's one of only a handful of guys capable for going for 50.
Absolutely. And he has still some elite skills in terms of his ability to get to the basket. He's a very underrated facilitator for other players. So Monte is a guy who could have another big payday in him, but he's the rap has historically been that it's tough to fit him in on a winning team. And though he's had some success in Dallas, I think that the matchup that he has with James Harden over the course of this series, and if they can go beyond that, will go a long way towards proving if he can be the first or second best player on a playoff level team.
I think a dude like Monte Ellis, his destiny is to be the overqualified sixth man for a really smart team, where if he has it, you just ride the hot hand, and if he doesn't have it, you have a coach that is maybe has the clout to sit him without Moody Ellis kind of taking over your locker room.
Right.
So I feel like there is a deal for him somewhere where he can just really flourish. But if somebody wants to try to pay him that you know, 5 over 50, they're going to be in trouble thinking he's going to carry their offense and be the guy for a playoff level basketball team. So his is going to be situational dependent, much like Rondo's.
Do you think, though, that somebody's going to pay Monte at least $10 million a year for a four-year contract? I mean, I think that contract is out there for him somewhere. I'm not sure if it will be a smart contract.
It won't be.
But I think it's probably out
but
there somewhere.
But it's there. I think it's definitely there. There are too many people that – too many big – the Knicks need somebody. The Lakers need somebody. There are too many big markets out there. Somebody's going to overpay for him.
And with the cap exploding the way that it is
– right.
It might not look like a disastrous deal the way it would have 2 years ago. So if you're one of those big market teams that strikes out in free agency, like you've promised your fans Kevin Love, you promised your fans that you're going to bring in somebody that's going to turn the tide, and all you're left with is Monte Ellis on the buffet table because everybody picked up everything that you wanted to eat, you're gonna have to pay him. He might win out just because of options. Yeah. And his game is a weird fit in today's NBA, the pace and space NBA. But if you have a dive big man, a guy like who can dive to the rim on the pick and roll, Monte Ellis can run the pick and roll for you over and over and over again and get you effective high percentage shots, whether it's him or somebody else. I think there's a spot for him, and I would love to see him on a team. You know, they always throw out the Spurs as kind of the stand-in for the smart organization. Mm-hmm. But even a team like the Atlanta Hawks or somebody that just needs a little juice playmaking, I feel like if they brought him off the bench, he'd be sixth man of the year the way that Jamal Crawford is always in the mix for sixth man of the year. I would love to see that for Monte Ellis.
And what about Kevin Love? Does he have much to prove, do you guys think, in this playoffs? To me, he doesn't really. I don't think anybody's looking at this season and saying, this is Kevin Love that we could be possibly bringing to our team because of the situation with the Cavaliers. I don't think that Kevin Love, I think he could almost perform completely underwhelmingly and still get a great big contract from somebody. I don't think it's going to matter for him.
Yeah, I agree, Rusty. I think that though he's obviously been under a lot of scrutiny this year, and I'm sure that if the Cavs fall short of reaching the finals, that he will inevitably shoulder part of the blame, rightly or wrongly. People know over the course of the last 5 years, he's been one of the top power forwards in the game. There's really nothing about him this year that's been different other than the way that he's been utilized on the court. He seems to be dealing with some back problems as well. I don't know whether it's indicative of some underlying issue that will present problems going forward, but it's very easy to justify backing up the dump truck and giving him that max contract, even with those concerns in mind.
He's going to get all the money. That's what's going to happen. We know when Kevin Love is put in a situation, he is going to compile stats at an all NBA level. I just want to know if the situation that is best for Kevin Love is necessarily the best situation for a team that has championship aspirations. When he's put in a situation to get his numbers, you don't win. We have a large enough sample size to say that Kevin Love, when he's doing Kevin Love things, surrounded by, NBA or sub-NBA level talent, that's a lottery team. Can he find a way to contribute to a championship level team without trying to inadvertently sabotage the efforts? I think that's what's on the line for him this spring, where if he is able to hit threes, crash the boards, do Kevin Love things and fill gaps, I think you can justify giving him that max level deal, thinking you can surround him with one or two other guys and accentuate his skill set. But we can also see a situation where he just mopes in the corner, doesn't really contribute in the ways that the Cavs need him to contribute, and you are giving him a max level deal after his one run in the playoffs ends, let's call it, underwhelmingly. So I think Kevin Love has a lot on the line for pride. Like, what is this guy? Is he just a good stats, bad team guy? Or is he somebody that is willing to sublimate what is best for him to see what's best for the team? One free agent I wanted to bring up real fast. I don't want to spend a lot of time on him because I think he's really boring. But I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with his contract this summer, because there are two things that the NBA values at a premium now in a way that it didn't prior. Three-point shooting, and your ability to protect the rim. Right now, there is a guy quietly that's going to be a free agent in Omer Asik with the New Orleans Pelicans, who has this rep is being this incredible rim protector, this beast of a defensive center that is limited offensively, who New Orleans gave up a pretty juicy first-round pick to Houston to go get. I hate this guy's game. I mean, I'm watching that Golden State game, and I'm watching over and over. They're getting to the rim because they don't know how to communicate. Anthony Davis is trying to cover the pick and roll up high because he thinks Omer Asik is coming in underneath to protect the rim, which is what they pay him to do.
Right.
And he's a step late every time, and he's sulking every time. And if he's not giving you elite level rim protection, he has no value. Mm-hmm. So is some team going to try to run that analytics game on what he does, what he allegedly does defensively, for a team that ranks pretty low in terms of defending the paint with Anthony Davis,
right,
mind you. Yeah. So is Omer Asik going to get a deal that he thinks he's going to get, or is this going to be the kind of case where the eye test beats out analytics?
Well, I think that the answer to that is going to depend in large part on what happens at the top of the draft as well, because this is an interesting year in that you've got a lot of potentially NBA-ready center or power forward prospects that are going to be going to some of the teams in need. But depending on how the lottery balls fall, if the Knicks don't end up with Okafor or Towns, I could see them being a team that would overpay for Asik because of the Phil Jackson more old school approach to the game. He's already identified a rim protector as being one of their priorities in the offseason, and we already know that the Knicks are not going to be embracing the pace and space modern game. You know, that's just not the world that Phil Jackson lives in. So I might put down a small wager that could be an interesting place.
Yeah, I mean, I think in free agency, I almost think by and large the eye test is often forgotten, and it's unfortunate, but I see it in all the sports. And unfortunately, I think that Omer is the kind of guy who is going to command dollars because of his reputation, and that's going to precede him, and that's just going to be what happens. That's what always happens in free agency, and it's what dooms a lot of teams like the Knicks. In the end, they end up with these guys who they've completely overpaid for and a team that's pretty unwatchable.
And now Ish from Philly wants to know, which playoff coach has the most on the line this spring? I'll take it from you first, Matt.
I think this one has to be David Blatt. I mean, there are plenty of other coaches who could potentially lose their jobs based on the results. I mean, if the Wizards don't make it out of the first round, they might finally get rid of Randy Whitman. But I think that David Blatt, coming into the year, the team, regardless of what they were saying out of training camp, this was a team with championship level expectations. And Dan Gilbert is somebody who has very strong feelings about the way that he runs his team. And Blatt has come under criticism over the course of the year. So I think that if they fall short of reaching the finals, if they lose in the second or third round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, you could see Blatt thrown under the bus. And he, at a minimum, I think, needs to make it out of the East to feel comfortable.
Yeah, no, he does. He does. If he doesn't go out of the East, and I think it's a hot-headed, probably short-sighted decision that leaves your team unstable and isn't good, but Cleveland's been known to make some of those decisions. And so I do tend to think that he's got a lot to lose. And incorrectly, I think Tom Thibodeau, too, is another guy who's on the hot seat who just doesn't deserve to be. I think what he's done with the Bulls has been profound almost. He took a defensive team last year and turned him into an offensive team this year and has shown he can coach both styles. I really think that he's a great coach, and the Bulls to let him go would be making a big mistake.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up Thibodeau too, because we talked about some guys that are making contract runs. Rondo and Monta Ellis, Asik, all sorts of guys that have a contract up. I think Tom Thibodeau is in a unique position to make an incredible contract run that you don't typically see from coaches of his caliber, mm-hmm. because it's no secret. He's basically gone. Whatever rift is in that relationship between him and the front office, that is irreparable. He might just be one of those guys that just wears on you after a bit. You know, he's very intense. He coaches every game as if it's game 7 of the NBA Finals, and the players love him, But I think that front office, and they have a history of doing this to coaches too. You ask Vinny Del Negro, you ask anybody that's coached in Chicago, even Phil Jackson got the runaround from those guys. And I just think he's gone. And he's going to put them in a really awkward position if they make a run to the Eastern Conference Finals or deeper, because as we saw in Game 1, Derrick Rose looking a little Derrick Rosey again. And they got guys. They got Powell. They got Joakim Noah. They got Mirotić off the bench.
Butler.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler. This is a team that is poised right now to make a pretty deep run with one of the two or three best coaches in the league year to year. And if he's able to mount this kind of run with the relationship as it is, what kind of contract is he going to be able to command on the open market from some of these other jobs that are going to open up? I mean, you got to figure Orlando's going to throw a ton of money at a coach. You got to figure, I mean, if I'm New Orleans, that's where I want Tom Thibodeau, but they gave this like playoffs or bust kind of ultimatum to Monty Williams and Dell Demps, which if Anthony Davis doesn't hit a double clutch three in January, those guys are out of jobs, which is, anyway, that's really stupid. But I feel like if you're in a position to hire Tom Thibodeau and he's a free agent this offseason, God, he's got a ton on the line this spring. He could turn a $4 million a year contract into something that's like seven, eight. I mean, you look at what Steve Kerr got paid having never coached before. This is a known entity in a field where we know that the turnover is high. And coaches like Thibodeau don't come along every day. So if you're able to get him, go get him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, what do you guys think about the Clippers? Doc Rivers obviously is, I feel like he's got a bit of a soft team in some way. Not Chris Paul so much, but I don't really blame Doc Rivers for the fact that the Clippers aren't going to go anywhere.
Got to hire a GM. You can't do exactly. He can't do both. I mean, we know he's a good coach. We know what he does in terms of motivating players. Look what he's done with DeAndre Jordan. I mean, I would if Doc the GM weren't hamstringing Doc the coach at every turn, I think the Clippers would be a real contender. But I think that's kind of a position where he's got to go get a personnel guy to actually do some scouting, to actually look at the cap, to actually not trade for your son, to actually run the team in a functional way so that they can really do right by Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah, you know, I think that the obvious solution, Doc stays on as the coach, and then Austin Rivers becomes the player GM.
That's beautiful.
Just let him take on some of the burden from dad, make those tough personnel decisions, run the advanced scouting department, all of those things that maybe a younger guy is better suited for. So I think that's what I'm looking for next year, Austin Rivers, player GM.
Who's more respected around the league than Austin Rivers?
Hard to imagine.
Who's got higher clout among the NBA fraternity where he can go and say, oh, we traded you?
Yeah.
He'll get punched in the face. Yeah. I want that to happen so badly now. I didn't even entertain that as an idea, and now that's my favorite thing I've heard all day long.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
And so we've got
last.
And last. And so we've got another reader question. Harley from Off the Grid, it seems like he is a big-time wrestling fan. Yeah. He wants to know who the biggest heel is in the playoffs and who the biggest face is in the playoffs. And for those who don't know, explain what heel and face is, Matt.
So these are all wrestling terms. The heels are the bad guys. The faces or baby face are the good guys. And as we were talking about before, basketball lends itself in the playoffs to these great clashes of personalities. So I think that you always have villains emerging each year. And then, of course, the redemptive or inspiring heroes emerge as well.
So you have an interesting take on who our heel and face is this spring, Matt. Who would you have for each position?
So I think that the face of the playoffs is LeBron James. I mean, you have the great triumphant return home. LeBron went from being a player who, even though at the end of the Miami years was no longer hated in the way he was for those first couple seasons, still was a polarizing figure. There were still people who felt like he had turned his back on his home. And he has been universally embraced coming back. Obviously, all the Cleveland folks have embraced him again. But throughout the league, even the casual fans, I think, are more on board with LeBron James now that he's gone back to Cleveland. And he's got the chance to bring the first title to that city in half a century. So obviously, if he's able to climb that mountain, then he becomes the conquering hero and probably the poster boy for hometown heroes in every walk of life. I think the biggest heel of the playoffs could potentially be LeBron James.
Hold on. So that's who you just said.
It's true. But I think that there's another reality that has existed alongside this triumphant return home narrative this season, and that is that LeBron has been enabled to play the same kind of role that he played in Cleveland the first time around, where he's really calling all the shots. He is the de facto president of basketball operations for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And you've seen it throughout the year with the way that he has undermined David Blatt's authority. It seems like he's really cast in his lot more with Ty Lue and views him as more of the official coach. He's called the shots in terms of some of the moves that they've made and the way that he's thrown Kevin Love under the bus as well. So if they fall short, and especially if they don't make it out of the East, I think that things could get kind of ugly in Cleveland. And he's not going to leave Cleveland or anything like that. But I think that you could see some folks thrown under the bus by LeBron, whether it's David Blatt or Kevin Love or someone else, that reveals a pettiness or immaturity that had been conquered a little bit by his time in Miami, being in a very professional organization and in a more enabling environment, could perhaps be emerging again.
Interesting, because he's put in that position. He's got that validation of rings now, where he's able to say things with an authority that he wasn't able to prior. So he's going to be in a unique position where he's either going to get all the credit or all of the blame, and it'll be interesting to see what public opinion is surrounding that.
When it's interesting too, because I tend to think that the reason Kevin Love became a Cavalier is all LeBron James, and yet here James is pretty much leaving him out all the time. And so yeah, it does kind of make him a bit of a heel. It's funny, I have long talked about heels in the NBA, and it's funny that our reader or our caller,
Harley from Off
Harley,
the Grid.
Harley, thank you.
Carrier Pigeon sent it in.
Right. From Off the Grid. So Harley, I thought that was really brilliant, because I used to really wish that Rip Hamilton would take that mask of his and paint it up like a wrestler and just totally embrace the heel role. Kobe Bryant should have done it. LeBron should have done it. He did a little. He started really kind of embracing it.
It didn't fit.
It didn't. You know, it was never the fit.
He was always a joyful player, and he was always, like, the story with him is he's always trying to recreate high school, you know, which was the most fun time of his life when they were conquering the world. And so whenever you see somebody that doesn't quite fit into that joyful high school vibe, a Kevin Love perhaps, that's who gets left out.
Yeah. No, that's what's happened. And so I kind of get him as a heel a little, and I do think that especially if they don't make it out of the East, that LeBron's going to heel up a little bit more. But I think that the real heel of the whole playoffs is a coach. I think Jason Kidd is a great heel in the NBA. He's bad in so many ways. He's a great coach, and I love what he's done with Milwaukee.
He's the best kind of bad. I love how cutthroat he is. I can't get enough of it.
And so he's a brilliant, brilliant heel. He plays it up brilliantly. He knows how to do just the wrong things to get under everybody's skin. He's that guy who's poking you all the time in class from the back, you know, and nobody ever sees, but you always feel. And then as far as the face goes, you know, I really go with Anthony Davis. He seems like the nicest man around, and he seems like an all-around good guy. I love, love, love his game. I think the Pelicans, despite the name, are going to be good in the future, and the mascot. I really tend to think Anthony Davis is my face.
And he's in such a good spot with that, too, because it's all potential. I mean,
yes.
You heard the number about like his PER at, what, 31, and the only guys that ever had a player efficiency rating in that range, you know, as LeBron, Jordan, and Wilt.
Right.
And he's 21, 22. So it seems like he's going to be this, like, fully evolved, like the way that the Terminator was able to evolve beyond being killed by mere mortals. You watch Anthony Davis and you're thinking, what's his prime gonna look like? What are we even dealing with here? So he's in that unique position where it's just all potential, and there's really no downside for him being in the playoffs. No one expects him to win. Like when we were watching game one and he just took over the fourth quarter, he made that a competitive ball game, mm-hmm. by virtue of being impossible to defend. Mm-hmm. So I like that as a face. I think my face is Steph Curry, because he's just so fun. I can't remember a guy that made me so deliriously happy to watch basketball.
Yes.
When he's taking the ball up probably about two steps in front of half court, there now he's in range to shoot.
Yeah.
And he's got these dribbling moves we haven't seen since like when you would watch a Pete Maravich archived footage thing and like the weird dribbling tricks he would do, but he does them in games. You know, Steph Curry is dribbling around guys like Chris Paul, who might be the best defender the point guard position's ever seen, mm-hmm. and he's dribbling circles around him. He's crossing them up. He's making people look foolish. He's more than the MVP. He's a guy that kind of encapsulates everything that is so fascinating about professional basketball, with the way that there seem to be no limits to his game. And when he catches fire, there's nothing like it. I think we need to have them in the finals because he is the most purely enjoyable entity in sports to me right now. He's the kind of guy that you can take somebody that doesn't watch basketball, doesn't care about sports. You know, the generic stand-in is like your mom. Like, if your mom doesn't want to watch the NBA Finals, you can say, hey, watch this guy, the baby-faced guy that looks like he's maybe 180 pounds. Watch him for 10 minutes, and the room's going to stop. He's going to make everybody fixate on what he's doing. So that's the guy that exemplifies everything that I love about professional basketball. My heel for the past handful of years has been Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. But this year, it's not for the reasons that it's been in the past, where it's, you know, he's just obnoxious and maybe the worst human being. He is going to make an NBA regulation playoff game this year last 3 hours.
Yeah.
Because the way that that Rockets-Mavericks series is set up, with the smart coaches combined with the abysmal free throw shooting, mm-hmm. we are going to see the hack of Dwight, hack of Rondo, hack of whatever. And Dwight has been kind of the guy responsible for a lot of this since Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah.
We are going to watch a game that does not resemble basketball anymore. Everything that I said about Steph Curry, kind of exemplifying what makes professional basketball so great and fun and fascinating, he's going to turn it into a free throw slog. Clang, blong, crang. And then he's going to do that thing where he like calls for the ball in the post, even though if he gets the ball in the post, they're going to foul him. He's going to go to the line. And he's going to cry and he's going to pout. And it's going to be just this, God, what a drag. I'm already dreading it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what happened to him? When he came into the league, he was such a friendly face and so fun. And
he was enabled.
Yeah.
He was enabled to think that he could dictate terms the way that somebody like Shaq was. Mm-hmm. And he got it in his mind that he was going to be in movies and he was going to be like this multimedia superstar. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Just Right with Common and Queen Latifah.
You know,
he shows up in that movie for some reason. So he's just one of those guys, I think, that just wanted to be more than a basketball player, and that pursuit kind of left him a little lost.
Yeah, and as a heel. And
as
turned
a heel.
Him into a heel.
Mm-hmm. And that
those are things often do.
And that's going to do it for part one of our inaugural episode on Can't Wait. To listen to part two, go right below what you're listening to right now on part one and stream the next 20, 30 minutes of all the really intelligent, really funny things that we have to say here on Can't Wait.